Chapter 31. Julia had to struggle to decipher Lin Wan Chu's menus and recipes. Although Han Chinese is the most widely spoken language in the world, there are several different dialects reflected by regional differences. Julia's mother taught her to read, write, and speak Mandarin, the most important of these, when she was a young girl. She had learned the most widespread of the three Mandarin variants, known as the Peking dialect. Because Lin Wan Chu had grown up in Jiangsu province, she wrote and spoke another variant of Mandarin, the Nanking dialect. Fortunately, there were enough similarities for Julia to fake it and get by. As she worked over the stove, she kept her head down and face away from anyone nearby. Her two helpers, an assistant cook and a dishwasher galley cleanup man, showed no sign of suspicion. They went about their business, speaking only when it concerned the evening meal, offering no small talk or gossip from the crew. Julia thought she caught the baker studying her with a peculiar look on his face. But when she ordered him to quit staring and get back to deep-frying wontons, he laughed, made a ribald remark, and went back to work. The stoves and the boiling pots and woks that were vigorously stirred soon turned the galley into a steam bath. Julia could not remember when she had sweat rivers. She drank glass after glass of water to maintain her bodily liquids. She gave a little prayer of thanks at watching the assistant cook take the initiative and prepare the watercress soup and the shredded chicken with bean sprouts. Julia gave a worthy performance of making the roast pork and noodles and the shrimp fried rice. Captain Hung Chang wandered into the galley briefly for a quick snack of sesame seed puffs after the Sung Lin Star was safely moored to the dock at Sungari. Then he returned to the bridge to receive the American customs and immigration officials. He looked Julia square in the face, but his eyes betrayed no sign other than simple recognition of who he thought was Lin Wan Chu. Julia joined the rest of the crew as they lined up and produced their passports to the immigration official who came on board. Ordinarily, the captain would present the documents so the crew could go about their duties. But the INS was particularly strict with vessels entering the port owned by Chin Chang Maritime. The official examined Lin Wan Chu's passport, which Julia had uncovered in the cook's cabin, without looking up at her. All neat and very professional, she thought. By looking her in the face, the official might have made an expression of recognition, no matter how inconsequential. Once the crew cleared immigration, they came down for their evening meal. The galley was located between the officer's wardroom and the crew's mess. As chief cook, Julia served the ship's officers, while her assistants ladled out food to the crew. She was anxious to roam about the ship, but until the crew was fed, she had to play out her role to avoid suspicion. Julia remained quiet throughout the meal, scurrying about the galley, occasionally flashing a smile at a crewman as they complimented her on the food and asked for seconds. She did not merely act like Lin Wan Chu. To everyone on board, she was Lin Wan Chu. There was no scrutiny, no incredulity. No one took notice of the negligible differences in mannerisms, appearance, or speech. To them, she was the same cook who prepared their meals on board the Sung Lin Star since the night they cast off in Qingdao. Item by item, she went over her mission in her mind. So far, things had gone smoothly, but there was a major hang-up. If 300 illegal immigrants were on board the ship, how were they being fed? Certainly not out of her galley. According to Lin Wan Chu's menu and recipe entries, she only prepared food for 30 crewmen. It didn't make sense for there to be another shipboard galley to feed passengers. She checked out the storage compartment and lockers, finding the correct amount of food supplies to feed the Sung Lin Star's crew for the voyage from China to Sungari. She began to wonder if Peter Harper's CIA source in Qingdao had been mistaken, and somehow gotten the name of the ship confused with another. Calmly, she sat in Lin Wan Chu's little office and acted as if she was working on the menu for the following day. Out of the corner of one eye, She watched as her assistant put away the leftover food in the locker, and the clean-up man wiped off the tables before attacking the dirty dishes, pots, and pans. Casually, she left the office and walked through the officer's wardroom and into the passageway, pleased that the two galley men took no notice of her leaving. She climbed a companionway and stepped out onto the deck below the wheelhouse and bridge wings. Already the big cranes on the dock were swinging into position to unload the containers stacked on the cargo decks. She looked over the side and watched as a towboat pushed a barge alongside the hull of the ship. The crew looked to be Chinese. Two of them began throwing plastic bags bloated with trash through a cargo hatch into the barge. The procedure was conducted under the scrutiny of a drug enforcement agent who probed and examined each sack before it was dropped overboard. The entire dockyard scene appeared completely innocent of any illegitimate activity. Julia could see nothing that raised questions. The ship had been searched by the Coast Guard, customs and immigration officials for illegal aliens and drugs, and nothing illicit had been found. The containers were filled with manufactured trade goods, including clothing, rubber and plastic shoes, children's toys and games, radios and television sets, all produced by cheap red Chinese labor to the detriment of thousands of American workers who had lost their jobs. She returned to the galley and filled a bucket with the sesame seed puffs, scallions and sesame seeds in a dough wrapper, that she knew were a favorite of Captain Hung Chang. Then she began moving through the bowels of the ship, checking out the compartments below the waterline. Most of the crew were working above, unloading the ship's cargo containers. The few who remained below appeared pleased when she wandered past and offered them a snack from her bucket. She skirted the engine room, reasonably assured no immigrants were hidden there. No chief engineer worth his salt would have permitted passengers near his precious engines. The only sickening moment of panic occurred when she became lost in the long compartment that held the ship's fuel tanks. She was startled by a crewman who came up behind her and demanded to know what she was doing there. Julia smiled, offered him her sesame seed puffs, and told him that it was the captain's birthday, and he wanted everyone to celebrate. The ordinary seaman, having no reason to suspect the ship's cook, gratefully accepted a handful of puffs and smiled happily. After a fruitless search looking into any compartment of the Sung Lean Star capable of holding and feeding scores of passengers and finding nothing suspicious, she made her way back to the open starboard deck. Standing at the railing as if she was idly wishing she could go ashore, and making certain no one was within earshot, she inserted a small receiver in her ear and began talking into the transmitter between her breasts. "I regret saying this, but the ship appears clean. I searched every deck and found no indication of illegal immigrants." Captain Lewis, on board the Weehawken, replied without hesitation.
"Are you secure?"
"Yes, I was accepted without reservation."
"Do you wish to disembark?"
"Not yet. I'd like to hang around a bit longer."
"Please keep me advised," said Lewis, "and be careful."
Lewis's parting words came muffled, as the air trembled suddenly with a thumping sound, followed by the exhaust roar of the Weehawken's helicopter sweeping over the dock. Julia suppressed an urge to wave. She remained leisurely hunched over the railing, gazing at the aircraft with detached curiosity. She felt a wave of pleasure just knowing that she was watched over by a pair of U.S. Coast Guardsmen who were acting as her angels. She was relieved that her job was done and angered that she had failed to discover any criminal activity. From the looks of it, Chin Chang had outsmarted everyone once again. If her mind ran in a practical vein, she could call Lewis to come get her, or simply jump ship into the arms of the nearest immigration agent. But she could not bring herself to quit by default. There had to be an answer, and Julia was determined to find it. She moved around the stern to the lower portside deck until she could look directly down into the barge that was now half-filled with plastic trash bags. She stood at the railing for a long minute, studying the barge and the towboat as its captain engaged the powerful engines to pull away from the Sung Lean Star.
The wash from the twin propellers began beating the calm brownish water into foam. Julia was seized with frustration. There was no crowd of immigrants huddled in sordid conditions on board the Sung-Lin Star. Of that she was positive. Nor did she truly doubt the CIA agent's veracity, who reported from Qingdao. Chin Chang was a shrewd customer. He must have devised a method that had fooled the best government investigators in the business. There were no hard and fast answers. If there was a solution, perhaps it was connected with the towboat and barge pulling away from the ship. She was left with no other options. Failure was staring her in the face again. She felt overwhelmed by a sense of inadequacy and self-anger. She knew then, beyond all doubt, that she had to act. One swift glance told her that the cargo door had been closed and there were no crewmen to be seen working the side of the ship's hull that faced the water opposite the dock. The captain of the towboat was standing at the helm, while one crewman acted as lookout on the bridge wing, and another stood forward on the bow of the barge, their eyes focused on the waters ahead. None were looking aft. As the towboat passed her position, she looked down on its stern deck. There was a long length of rope coiled aft of the funnel. She estimated the drop at 10 feet, and climbed over the railing. There was no time to call Lewis and explain her action. Any hesitation was brushed aside, for Julia was a woman of quick decision. She took a deep breath and leaped. Julia's dive into the barge was observed, not by any of the Sung-Lin Star's crew, but by Pitt on board the Marine Denizen, which was anchored at the entrance to the port. For the past hour, he had sat in the captain's chair on the bridge wing, tolerant of the sun and occasional passing rain shower, and scrutinized the activity swirling around the container ship through a pair of powerful binoculars. He was especially intrigued by the barge and towboat alongside. He watched intently as the trash accumulated on the long voyage from China was tied neatly in bags and dropped from a hatch in the ship's hull to the barge below. When the last trash bag was tossed overboard and the hatch closed, Pitt was about to turn his attention to the containers being hoisted onto the dock by the cranes, when, unpredictably, he saw a figure climb the railing along the deck above and drop onto the roof of the towboat. "What the hell?" he burst. Rudy Gunn, who was standing near Pitt, stiffened. "See something interesting? Somebody just took a dive off the ship onto the towboat. Probably a crewman jumping ship." "It looked like the ship's cook," Pitt said, keeping the glasses fixed on the boat. "I hope he didn't injure himself," said Gunn. "I think a coil of rope broke his fall. He appears to be uninjured." "Have you discovered anything that still makes you think there is some sort of submerged craft that can be moved from beneath the ship and under the barge?" "Nothing that would hold up in court," Pitt admitted. Then the opal and green eyes became intense, and a faint glint radiated from them. But all that could change in the next 48 hours.